The gist. I was surprised to see the Weiler Group's large neuroplasticity-like clinical trial pop up as I was searching for large finished long COVID trials. Only 3 of the 15 large or largish long COVID clinical trials had at least a modest positive result, and this was one of them. Neuroplasticity is a pretty hot-button topic in these diseases, but recovery stories abound, and I've decided it must be broached. One of Health Rising's core commitments, after all, is to explore as many treatment options as possible. This is one of a small series of blog posts that will attempt to objectively examine neuroplasticity. They will include a broader overview, a neuroplasticity poll, and a couple of blogs exploring some of the techniques used. This study used the CATS, or CATS, and sustained arousal models, which propose that an infection triggers an alarm response in the body that affects the immune system, the autonomic nervous system, and other systems. The alarm response should tamp down as the infection clears, but in some people, it doesn't. The model proposes that the alarm response is kept alive when the patient repeatedly tries to do something only to have his or her symptoms ramp up again. This causes expectancies to form, such as, quote, when I go for even a short walk, I will get really tired, end quote. The brain, sensing this pattern, sends autonomic unconscious messages in the form of symptoms and thoughts that attempt to deter the person from going for a walk again. This is simply how the brain functions. It's a kind of shorthand it engages in. It deals with any situation we encounter by referring back to an earlier similar situation. If one repeatedly experiences symptoms while walking, it will be determined that walking is not helpful. The CATS model attempts to remedy the situation by bringing into the open the symptoms experienced, how they are dealt with, and the decisions made. It then tries to flip the script by suggesting ways to better manage the symptoms so they don't evoke alarm, by helping the person feel safe and able to slowly increase their activity. The study included 2 to 6 behavioral sessions that were spaced 2 to 8 weeks apart. The study's main goal was the physical functioning score on the SF-36, which assesses how much a person believes they are physically inhibited by their illness. Symptom assessments were also done. 67% of patients receiving behavioral therapy improved the physical functioning score by at least 10 points. That was a good result, but 50% of the patients in the usual care arm also improved their physical functioning score by at least 10 points. A post-trial analysis found that for every 5 people treated with the behavioral intervention, one more person improved by more than 10 points compared with standard care alone. In other words, the behavioral intervention significantly increased the physical functioning score in about 1 out of 5 patients trying it. All in all, the behavioral treatment was considered to have produced a modest effect on how limited the participants felt they were physically. It appears that a smaller group of people did quite well, and most people had mild to no benefits. That was the highlight of the study. The vitality scores indicated that the treatment had a small to modest effect on feelings of vitality and energy or fatigue. While some improvement was made, the behavioral group still experienced low vitality and high levels of fatigue. Post-exertional malaise fared a bit better, with the behavioral group experiencing small to moderate decreases in their experience of post-exertional malaise, or PEM. This led to a bit of a dilemma. By the end of the study, a subset of participants in the behavioral group believed they were less limited physically, but their vitality remained low, and they were still quite fatigued. Their belief that they could do more physically did not translate into substantially reduced fatigue or increased vitality. Hidden in that group was probably a small subset of patients whose post-exertional malaise, fatigue, and vitality improved noticeably. Most of the other people probably experienced small gains, and some experienced no gains. In the end, the gains in the behavior group were quite modest and honestly, what I would have expected from any chronic illness. The idea that the brain is inputting negative thoughts, feelings, and emotions that are not helpful, though, makes sense in any chronic illness. It does not contradict the idea that biological factors may also keep people with long COVID, ME/CFS, etc. in check. Both can and probably are happening at the same time. There is something for everyone in this study. People who embrace neuroplasticity can take some cheer from the fact that probably a relatively small subset of patients did appear to improve noticeably. The Weiler group wants to isolate that subset, and I hope they can, because these practices often are fairly cheap and some come with money-back guarantees. If you're interested in this area, they may be worth a try. You might be in that group. People focused on biological explanations of these diseases can take cheer from the fact that the results from the behaviorally treated group as a whole were quite modest, i.e., nothing in this study says that CATS, or CATS, is a pathway to recovery for most people with long COVID. Support Health Rising and keep the information flowing. At this point, in the text version of the gist, you'll see a link where you can choose to give one time or set up a monthly donation. Thanks for listening.